Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, titled Deliverance of the Yamal Arjuna Trees. Today we're reading Text 4. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Antaha Pravishya Gangayam. Anta Pravishya Gangayam. Antaha within. Pravishya entering. Gangayam the Ganges, known as Mandakini. Amboja of lotus flowers. Vanarajini, where there was a congested forest. Shikridatuhu, the two of them used to enjoy. Yuvantibihi, in the company of young girls. Ghajo, two elephants. Eva, just like. Karenubi, with female elephants. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Within the waters of the Mandakini Ganges, which were crowded with gardens of lotus flowers, the two sons of Kuvera would enjoy young girls, just like two male elephants enjoying in the water with female elephants. Purport. People generally go to the Ganges to be purified of the effects of sinful life. But here is an example of how foolish persons enter the Ganges to become involved in sinful life. It is not that everyone becomes purified by entering the Ganges. Everything, spiritual and material, depends on one's mental condition. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshulam Militam Yenam Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Bandeham Si Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Si Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitam Sha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye
Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Read the verse one more time. Within the waters of the Mandakini Ganges, which were crowded with gardens of lotus flowers, the two sons of Kuvera would enjoy young girls, just like two male elephants enjoying in the water with female elephants. So in this chapter, we're hearing the history of Nala Kuvera and Manyagriva. In the previous chapter, first just let me say, I have no knowledge, I have no devotion, I'm very embarrassed to sit in front of all of the assembled Vaishnavas. Please have mercy on me. I feel myself quite unfit and unqualified to speak here. In the previous chapter, Mother Yashoda bound Lord Krishna as a small child to a grinding mortar after he had broken the butter pot. And it's described, Krishna thought, now I'm going to do something even more naughty than I did before. And he saw two Yamal Arjun trees in the courtyard. And he thought to break those trees by putting the grinding mortar that he was attached to between them and pulling them down. We've had the occasion to travel to Mauritius a couple of times. And in that place, they have a lot of agriculture, I think mostly growing sugar cane. And the devotees told us, there would, you know, as we were traveling down the road, each side of the road would be lined with trees. And it was explained, these are Yamal Arjun trees, just like the trees that Krishna broke. They put them on the sides of the agricultural fields to protect the fields from storms, because these trees are especially strong and they don't break in the storms, and it protects the fields to have these kinds of trees here. So those are the kinds of trees that Krishna broke, the ones that are really hard to take down. So there's a history to those trees, and that's what we're hearing about now. Previously, those trees were the demigods, Nala Kuvera and Manyagriva, and they were enjoying in heaven. This verse is especially describing how they're enjoying in the Ganga. There's crowded forests. What did it say in the word for word? It was nice. Congested forests. There were congested forests of lotus flowers. So it was like absolutely five-star resort vacation. And they have young women that they're enjoying with. And they were so intoxicated that we'll hear later, when Narada Muni comes, the great respectable Narada Muni, the spiritual master of Vyasadev and Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj and so many others in Bhagavatam, when he happened to come by that place, the girls that were there, they felt at least enough shame that they should cover their bodies. But Nala Kuvera and Manyagriva, they were so intoxicated, they didn't even have that much shame. If Narada Muni, if we were somehow fortunate to meet Narada Muni, it would be the greatest blessing and benediction of our lives. Any cultured person at least would give a little respect, speak some nice words, give a place to sit, maybe some water. If someone has intelligence, they will inquire about their spiritual welfare, how to make progress in devotional life. He's the most fit person. But these guys were so out of it. They were so intoxicated. They didn't even cover their naked bodies in front of him. So it was a great offense. And for that they were cursed by Narada Muni to become trees. And he cursed them to become trees for 100 years of the demigods. I'm not exactly sure what that means in terms of our years. 100. Thank you. Prabhu says it means 36,000 years from our standpoint. And ultimately they got the darshan of Krishna. So, a theistic person should have at least a little gratitude. We should think, especially if we're in such a first-class arrangement, we should think, how are these arrangements possible? It's not by my power. These things are coming by a higher power. I should be grateful. I should think I should do some sacrifice. I should want to please. I should want to please that higher power from where these things have come. That's the beginning of theistic thought. These people were so materialistic. Their consciousness was so bad. They didn't even have that much of a mind. When I lived in New York City, Hare Krishna, Jai Sisi Gornitai, Jai Sisi Krishna Balaram, Jai Sisi Radha Sham Sundar Lalita Vishaka Devi Ki Jai. I was just going to say, many years ago, I knew somebody who was also a banker's son when I lived in New York City, and I kind of saw his nature a little bit. His father was in a very, very high post in a national bank, some European bank, and so the son, you could see he had a good job. He had an easy life. He didn't have to struggle very hard, and he lived in a lot of material opulence. And what was his activity? Primarily, he was enjoying women and intoxication. And just I met him a little bit, and he was kind of arrogant and condescending. He said, "Where do you live?" And at that time, I was trying to be very careful about not misspending money. So I was sharing a very simple apartment in a very kind of low-class neighborhood. And he mocked me a little bit, like, "Oh, you live in like that, you know, very poor neighborhood." And so anyway, I saw his nature, and I thought, I remembered Nala Kuvera and Manya Griva. They're also like the banker's son. They're their father was Kuvera, who was the treasurer of the demigods. I heard a story once. There was once a materialistic person who in his whole life, he was just absorbed in materialistic activities and sinful activities, never took any trouble for spiritual life. And the story is that once he was visiting his girlfriend and he wanted to bring her some flowers. And at that time there was a storm and he had to cross a river. And somehow in the storm, the storm washed away his flowers. And his flowers fell from his hands and they went down the river. And in that moment he said, "Hey Govinda." And the meaning was, "All right, let those flowers be for Govinda, because I have lost them." And so at the end of his life, when he was being judged in front of Yamaraj, the verdict was, "You'll have to suffer in hell for a long time. But the good news is that one time in your life, you offered those flowers to Govinda. So for that, you'll get to spend just a short time, a few moments, a few hours in heaven." And so that person got to heaven and they welcomed him kindly and they said, welcome to heaven. Now is your opportunity to, you know, enjoy in this nice place. And he said, do you have any flower gardens? And they said, yes, yes, we do. He said, do you have any garden shears? And they said, yes, we have that also. So they gave him the shears and he went to the flowers and he just, hey Govinda, hey Govinda, hey Govinda, hey Govinda. So anyway, that's a better use of the facility of the heavenly planet. They're just thinking to enjoy for their sense gratification, but also there they should do some service. It was described in the previous verse, Nalu Kubera and Manyagriva. They are the worshippers of Lord Shiva, right? It said that, yes. Anyway, I can't find exactly, but it's mentioned like that. They are the worshippers of Lord Shiva. And there's nice discussion in the end of the 10th canto where there's a question from Maharaj Parikit to Sukadeva Goswami. And the question is like this. If devotional service to Krishna is the highest goal of life, why is it that Krishna's devotees are so poor? And conversely, why do we see Lord Shiva, he dresses in a very simple fashion and he lives like, he lives under trees or he lives in the snow in the mountains. He doesn't even live in a house. But the people that worship Lord Shiva, they become very rich, very opulent, very well-to-do in the material sphere. How can we understand this? Vishnu, he's living in so much opulence. He's dressed nicely. He's being served by Lakshmi Devi. But his devotees are so poor. How can we understand this? It's a good question, right? And Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, there's two main camps in Indian culture, in old Vedic culture. And Prabhupada, I think he specially references the followers of Shankaracharya and the followers of Ramanujacharya. And he says sometimes they will meet together and they will debate and discuss and express their disagreements with one another's philosophy. Prabhupada says, generally, the followers of Ramanujacharya, they emerge victorious in those meetings. But anyway, there's always this tension. Who is the smarter person? Which is the better path to follow? Should we worship Krishna? Should we worship Shiva? The worshippers of Shiva are so opulent. Here they're in heaven, enjoying in the Ganga with the forests of lotus flowers. And so the answer is that Shiva is in charge of the material energy and his wife is Durga Devi. And by worshipping demigods, the effect is different. The effect of worshipping demigods is that one can easily achieve material opulence. But those opulences are not really a benefit to the worshipper. And in fact, they can become a detriment. And the references we know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kamaistaister Krita Jnana Prapadyante Nyadevata Tam Tam Niyamam Ashtaya Prakritya Nayatasvaya. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires, surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Krishna also says, Antavyattu falam tesham tad bhavat yalpamedasam devam deva yajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. So we understand that everything in this material world, it's temporary and it's full of misery. And so even achieving great opulence in this material world, even if you can get some happiness, it won't last for a long time. And like I heard Prabhupada say, you know, even if you achieve great opulence, it'll never be unalloyed happiness. There will always be some pinprick, some pain, some trouble, some disturbance will be mixed in there. Look at these guys, they're spacing out in heaven and everything is going all right. And then, you know, it's like they had an accident. They disrespected Narada Muni, and just like that, they had to take the body of trees. So it's not, their arrangement wasn't permanent. Their arrangement was, it was limited, it was temporary. And they messed it up and they lost it. So the benefits that you can get from demigod worship, especially worshiping Shiva, worshiping Durga, those benefits are like that. They're limited, they're temporary, they are mixed with the pain. Still you have to endure birth, death, old age, and disease. And so an intelligent person won't aspire for those things. Krishna says it's a less intelligent person that does that. And more than that, it will tend to degrade the consciousness. Like, you know, like this banker guy that I knew. He had so much opulence, but then what was his mentality? The reason I knew him is because, you know, my friend knew a girl that he was connected to, and by his influence, she was becoming badly, she was getting involved in some like horrible types of intoxication. So all that opulence, what was the influence? It was so degrading. So by worshipping Shiva, by worshipping the demigods, maybe you can achieve a higher degree of material opulence, but that's not really a success. On the other side, Krishna, Hari, he is fully transcendental to the three modes of nature. And when one takes shelter of Hari, we know this verse also, what does Krishna say? Daivihiesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So by worshipping Krishna, what is the benefit? The benefit is that a person can become completely transcendental to the modes of material nature. By worshiping the demigods, you become further implicated, further degraded in the cycle of action and reaction. And by worshiping Krishna, you become elevated so that you're able to transcend the three modes of nature. Prabhupada writes that to be nirguna means to be devoid of material opulence. When we see great personalities, we appreciate their simplicity, that they're very frugal. They have they don't have material opulence. They have, you know, they're living simply, just according to what's required to keep the body and soul together. And in that way, they don't become falsely proud of material opulence. And when Sukadeva Goswami is answering this question to Maharaj Prickett, he references a discussion between Maharaj Yudhisthira and Lord Krishna, it said after the Ashwamedha Yajna was done, Yudhisthira asked the same question, why is it that your devotees are so poor? And Krishna answers, Prabhupada said, Krishna smiled. He was very pleased by such a question. And when Krishna speaks, he doesn't just speak to the person who is asking the question. He answers in such a way that the whole world will be benefited. So Krishna says there, if I especially favor a devotee and wish to care for him, the first thing I do is take away his riches. When a devotee becomes penniless and impoverished, his relatives and family no longer take interest in him and often give up their connection with him. Thus the devotee becomes doubly unhappy. He'll have no money and he'll have no family. So are you all ready for this? This is the special mercy of Krishna. I don't exactly remember. I wish I was able to look up this reference, but I believe that it says in the Lilamrita, or I read some other biography, Srila Prabhupada says, when he encountered this verse, when I especially favor a devotee, I take everything away from that person, and then their family abandons him also. Prabhupada was studying this maybe before the time he took sannyas, and he says he was horrified to read this verse, because it's horrifying actually. This is the path that we're on. But it is not only that. It is not only that Krishna takes everything away. Because the opulence of a devotee is what? The opulence of a devotee is he becomes advanced in spiritual knowledge, in devotional service. He becomes advanced in developing the 26 qualities of a Vaishnav. He becomes tolerant, he becomes kind, peaceful, religious, truthful, moral. I don't remember the qualities, all of them. He becomes devoted to Krishna. So externally, he may be very poor, but internally, he becomes a soul surrendered to Krishna in his natural position, transcendental to the three modes of material nature, and in that way can achieve real happiness in congruence with our eternal nature. The soul is eternal, the soul is full of knowledge, the soul is full of bliss. And so by surrendering to Krishna, we can realize that. That is a standard of happiness that is far beyond what the demigod worshippers can achieve. So Prabhupada wrote in this purport, it is not that everyone becomes purified by entering the Ganges. That's a very heavy comment. Generally, it's written in several places, by taking bath in the Ganges, then one will become free from sinful reactions. But this example of Nalukuvera and Manyagriva, their mentality is so low, they're doing sinful activity while they're in the Ganges. Right? A respectful devotee, you go to the Ganges with some humility, you know, you're praying for mercy. These guys are taking it so for granted that they're indulging in sinful life while they're in the Ganga. So Prabhupada said, it is not that everyone becomes purified by entering the Ganges. So we have to have the right type of consciousness to really get the benefit. Although ultimately we can say it took a long time, but the ultimate result for them was good. Just they had to sit as trees for 36,000 years. Prabhupada writes, everything spiritual and material depends on one's mental condition. So like Krishna says, yayatam mam prapadyante, as we surrender unto Krishna, he reciprocates accordingly. It's not that, it's not all one. If one will chant the holy name without any clear, specific conception, then you will get one type of result. If you will chant the offended name, you'll get one type of result. If you'll chant Namabhas, another result. If you chant the pure name, you will get another result. If you chant with Krishna Prema, if you chant in the mood of a servant, in the mood of a parent, in the mood of a friend, in the mood of a lover, it's not all one. And so by doing a devotional activity with a totally materialistic mentality, or even with complete disregard, with absolutely no care, you know, for any spiritual benefit, there's one type of result. You know, it says in the when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's speaking to Haridas Thakur, he says this Kali Yuga is so bad. Everybody is just doing sinful activities non-stop, killing cows, destroying the Brahminical culture. How can these people ever be delivered? And Haridas Thakur says, don't be intention about that. Because simply by chanting Namabhas, simply by chanting the reflection of the holy name of Krishna, one can be completely liberated. And the example he gives is that the Yavanas, or the Muslim people, they in their culture, if something is against their regulative principles, they call it haram. It is like for example, they don't take the flesh of the pig because that is haram. And so Haridas Thakur says, so the Yavanas are saying haram, and the pure devotees, they are saying ha ram, like, oh my Lord Ramachandra, oh my Lord Ramachandra. And so they are saying the name Ram, and they are decorating it with ha, like, which is like a calling out, oh Ram. So even though they are talking about something totally different, just by saying that Ram, that name Ram, ha ram, then they are getting the benefit still of speaking the Lord's name. And so they will be delivered by that chanting. And the proof is Ajamil. In the Bhagavatam, we know Ajamil, he named his son Narayan, and he wasn't at all in devotional consciousness, but at the time of death, he called for his son, and ultimately he was delivered by the Vishnu Dutas. And so just by chanting the Namabhas, still one will be delivered. And then he says, this is the point I want to make. If that's true for someone that chants Namabhas, then what to speak of someone who will chant the name with faith and with devotion? So Prabhupada says, everything spiritual and material depends on one's mental condition. So I think the main question is, how can we improve our mental condition? How can we do our devotional services in a way that we will get the most benefit? We don't want to be like Nala Kuvera and Manyagriva sitting in the Ganga, getting no benefit from it. That's horrible. So I think that the whole process of Krishna consciousness, that's what it's all about. It's about improving our mental condition, improving our consciousness, approaching the Lord with a deeper, more pure mood of surrender. Anyway, there was something else I was going to say, but maybe we'll just stop there if anyone has any question or comment.
I just want you to know that you said that Krishna, whenever he bestows his mercy, he takes away everything. But we see in our society there are so many rich devotees. And even if someone is rich and a devotee is all missing that, is he not taking the mercy of Krishna? Like, how we should contemplate on that?
Right. How come there are rich devotees? So here he's saying, if I especially favor a devotee, so it doesn't necessarily mean for all. That's one point. Another point is, we do see The simple example is the case of Sudama Brahman. He was, you know, absolutely poverty-stricken Brahman. He was a class friend of Krishna. And he was so poor that his wife was saying, "Please, Prabhu, you know, Krishna is your friend. Maybe he can help us." And he was reluctant, "Oh, I shouldn't ask him for anything like that. No, please, you know, our condition is so bad." So he brought just a little palm full of chip rice and he went to meet Krishna in Dwarka. Krishna gave him so much respect as a Brahmin, sat him on the bed, washed his feet, inquired very sweetly, "Do you remember when we were kids, how we served our spiritual master in the Gurukul?" And even, and then he took little bit of chipped rice. He took. Sudama was shy to even give the chipped rice that he had brought, but Krishna like forcibly took it from him. And then Sudama left, and he said, "Oh, I forgot to ask for anything." And I think at that time, I think it's written, he says, "Anyway, the Lord knows better than to give me any material opulence. Why? Because I will misuse it. Material opulence, it should be used in the service of the Lord. If we can utilize it in the service of Krishna, then it's very nice. But if it will degrade us, as conditioned soul, material opulence will tend to degrade us. It will tend to inflame our lower nature." And so Krishna is very careful. This is another point that was there. If someone is rich, if someone is poor, it is not by that person's... If a devotee is rich, if a devotee is poor, it is not like ordinary karma that I am suffering or enjoying. It is Krishna's mercy. And the analogy is, a child has to be controlled in their play. If you just let a child do whatever the child wants, then the child will not grow and mature properly. It's the father's duty. He has to bring discipline to the child. He has to educate the child. So then the child can grow properly to become a mature adult. So like that, Krishna, you know, if he sees this person is going to become degraded by material opulence, then Krishna may want to discipline that devotee by taking all the opulence away. And if he can understand that that the devotee will utilize everything nicely, then he may give so much opulence, as he gave to Sudama Brahman at the end. I think in the life of Srila Prabhupada, you know, when he was in his grihastha life, he was working as a pharmacist. There were so many reversals in his business endeavor. You know, sometimes he really suffered, like financially. It was like a very hard struggle. And then, you know, he left his family. What did he have? Just living simply in those rooms. And then later, he was the acharya of a whole huge society with so much facility and temples and so on. But he never misused such things. So Krishna can give opulence to great devotees who can utilize things properly. Is that okay?
Reference Prabhupada saying how it was a lecture in 1973 in Los Angeles when Prabhupada described how everything was taken away. He said that his business, all his money, everything. Of course, the room was packed with devotees and he started laughing. And Prabhupada said, "No." He said it was horrible. He said it was very difficult. So, we even think like that. We hear these things and we think, "Oh, that's nice, but if it happens to you, very serious situation." So Prabhupada said, "No." Of course, then he says, "Now I have so much." Everything was there. But he expressed it with great emotion, how difficult sometimes Krishna puts us in these situations.
You were giving the example of the chanting of Muslims, they chant Ram. But we are chanting 60 rounds, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare And he has said that it should be changed purely and you have to be pure devotee to go back home by Kapati. So how is this chanting in one word, Aram Ram and Ajami chanted Narayana, they got benefit? And Vishnu.
My understanding is that's the glory of the holy name. Even one chanting of, you know, Namavas by saying Haram, they're so glorious and there's so much benefit. So if we're sincerely trying to advance in devotional service and chant sincerely our 16 rounds, the point is how much more hope there is for benefit for that person. It's not that we're not in the less fortunate position if we're sincerely trying to chant. Is that okay?
Prabhu, regarding the question of my Lord favored to fix our everything. Particularly in that verse, our Acharya teaches purport that when someone is devoted and surrendered to the Lord and unfortunately get deviated because of the opulences, in that situation, Krishna takes all the plans. Only in that situation, if you are surrendered and want to become devoted and unfortunately deviated to such a material opulences, then Krishna takes all, otherwise your opulences will be intact. Don't worry, if you are engaging with the consciousness and are utilizing it for the devotional service, otherwise, so many non-devotees are also there, they are very rich. It doesn't take all everyone's sense. Well, although you must.
Thank you, Guru. I'm so sorry. Maybe last one.
Thank you very much. How do you like in the Purport Prabhupada likes to separate things? Bears and bandages. It's just not that everybody agrees.
Thank you. In a way, I'm thinking about the same question. I don't want to say that I have a perfect answer, but you know, just one point I want to say is that Nalu Kuvera and Manyagriva, Prabhupada says they got no benefit, but somehow at the end they met Lord Krishna. So it took some time. They had to go through that difficulty living as trees. But ultimately there was an auspicious result. So maybe you can say like that. But directly, you know, at that time, they were not like becoming purified in their consciousness, it seems. But long term, they got some benefit. That's the best I can say. I also have that question. Thank you for asking. Hare Krishna, maybe we leave it there? Or yes, Prabhu?
A small point that for getting purified, you don't have to chant 16 rounds from sins. That has to be there. That is very clear. One thing, first time when we chanted Hare, it was all Krishna. So, what we are doing while we are chanting 16 rounds in response to this question is first to get love for God. Yes, the other question is to get ego. Mom, you say without endeavor, without desire to get love of God, we don't get love of God. So we are not chanting to get purified or liberated from him. We are chanting so that we get love of God, which is the highest portion. Also, sometimes one person asks me, why you did not get liberated? If I have got liberated immediately from the Godhead, and whom you have asked this question? So devotees are kept here for some time so they can preach the glories of Krishna. So while acting in that capacity, serving Krishna, we are already liberated. And they have the ticket and time for going back to 40,000. Go back to 40,000. It's not a problem. We are liberated as well as we can. That's not
Thank you very much.
You would have asked the question. No questions, no ask the questions. All of us have gone back to 40,000 immediately. Who will preach to us?
Thank you so much. Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.